Oh, it's easy to look at what's wrong out there, but you know, before there can be a revolution in society, there must first be a revolution in the church, and that means change for you and me.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Oh, it's easy to point fingers. They're so bad. These people are messing up society. Look at these politicians. But you know, the real state of the nation falls on the people of God. The real state of the nation falls on the church. The temperature of the nation is going to be set by the people of God, especially when we are so many tens of millions in a country. So as I've said repeatedly over the years, the greatest problem in America is not so much the presence of darkness, it's the absence of light. I want to talk to you today about doing something about that light. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884 to join the discussion. My website, askdrbrown.org. Before I go any further, I posted a very, very important article. Yeah, every article I write I feel is important, but this one I wrote with even extra urgency. It's called A Dangerous and Deadly Deception, one of the worst deceptions spreading in the body today. And it's kind of the natural progression of a compromised gospel leading to out-and-out deception. Please read it when you get a chance. When you do, you're going to want to recommend it to your friends. Go to AskDrBrown.org, click on The Line of Fire, and you'll see a link there to this article, A Dangerous and Deadly Deception. Friend, I want to encourage you today that change is possible. I want to encourage you today that the Church of America, I'm talking about true believers, that we can see change come to us, and that change can actually impact the nation. I'm talking about an awakening beginning with us. I'm talking about a revolution, radical, dramatic, sweeping change coming to us. But you know, it's like anything else, change is costly. Let's say you're completely out of shape and you want to get in shape. You can't just push a button or read a book. You have to act on it. If your finances are a mess, you can't just read a book about getting out of debt. You've got to then implement the principles. If you recognize your family is chaotic and out of order, you can't just listen to a seminar. You've then got to live the thing out. So the question is, how willing are we? How willing are we? If we're pastors, if we're leaders, if we have platforms to the nation, how willing are we to go before the Lord and say, Lord, how are we lining up with your word and your purpose? How much are we doing things based on human tradition? Perhaps there's something more than the Sunday morning Christianity that many of us have been used to, this lovely home and garden religion that basically is not a threat to hell. In fact, yeah, all right, I'm going to have to save the leprechaun story for when we come back. This is one you don't want to miss. So in a moment, I'll share that with you. But my focus today is going to be on revolution in the church. We're not bashing the church. We're not bashing leaders. We're not bashing ministries. We're talking about things that we need to change. And if we change, we can see change come to the nation. And what a historic day it is today in America, as the arguments for and against Prop 8, the oral arguments, have been heard before the Supreme Court. I just spoke to one of the attorneys whose folks are on the front lines of this, getting an update. I'll share more of that with you in some fascinating audio clips you don't want to miss. All that beginning with the leprechaun story when we come back right here on The Line of Fire, your listener-sponsored voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution.
The It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to tell you a very funny story, but it's actually one with a moral application. Before I do that, tell me if you agree with this post that I just spotted a moment ago from David on our Line of Fire website, 866-348-7884. Do you agree with this? He said a true revolution would put tens of thousands of Christians in jail. We're talking about a Jesus revolution, talking about us obeying the principles of Scripture, not fighting with worldly methods of hatred or anger or violence, but with the Jesus principles. He said a true revolution would put tens of thousands of Christians in jail. If suddenly all the Christians in America came out of the closet and were unashamed, students praying in school and writing about Jesus in the Bible in English class, etc., students would get expelled from their schools. And Christian teachers being open about their faith in school, they'd get fired too. But it would take something like that to bring freedom back to the believers, but there would be such a heavy price, and I don't think anyone wants to pay it. Do you agree with that? There are several parts to that statement. Do you agree? What do you agree with? Do you disagree? What do you disagree with? 866-348-7884. As we talk about revolution in the church, radical, dramatic, sweeping change in the church, which will lead to radical, dramatic, sweeping change in the society. I'll be quoting extensively from my book, Revolution in the Church, Challenging the Religious System with a Call for Radical Change. I'll tell you how you can get it digitally, an ebook form, a little bit later in the broadcast. Okay. We have two grandkids that live nearby us with their mom and dad, our daughter and our son-in-law here in North Carolina. And we have two of our grandkids with our older daughter and our older son-in-law, our other son-in-law is actually younger, in Maryland, where we used to live. And the grandkids in Maryland are 9 and 6. 6-year-old, absolutely adorable, extraordinary little girl named Riley. Well, Nancy was up visiting the family in Maryland last week. And over dinner, they were talking. Now, the kids are in public school. The kids are in public school, so we can't control everything here. So she said to Riley, Riley, do you pray to Jesus every night? And Riley said, yes, I pray to Jesus every night, and I pray to the leprechauns. Now, you got to understand, I'm not just saying she's cute because she's a granddaughter. She's an exceptionally cute little girl. So she said, yes, I pray to Jesus, and I pray to the leprechauns. So everyone at the table, her brother, they're all absolutely hysterical. So Nancy and I, we've just been laughing over that. Obviously, you introduced her to the idea that Jesus is real, God is real, and the leprechauns are not. Atheists out there listening saying, see, it's all the same. All right, fine, go ahead. Believe that they're all the same. And anyway, we're sitting having dinner last night, and I hadn't looked at my phone, looked at emails for quite some time. And we're just getting to the end of dinner. We had to go back in separate cars where we were going. And I said, oh, let me just look at these emails. And I saw one that said, this is classic. It was forwarded to me by a staff member. And it's a grandfather who's a Jewish believer wondering what he should do with his 7-year-old granddaughter who believes in leprechauns. And the wife is like, don't make a fuss out of it. The grandfather's like, but I need to say something. So here we are talking about it. And we get an email. Forwarded to me about someone dealing with the issue of his granddaughter, 7-year-old granddaughter, leprechauns. I mean, we were just in stitches. We couldn't believe it. Sent it immediately to our family in Maryland. But here's the point. Here's the point. It's a funny story. It's cute. But for some of us, Jesus is not tremendously different than leprechauns. You say, Mike Brown, that's the most offensive thing I ever heard. Oh, okay. You read Jesus' words, how seriously do you take them? You see the call to go into all the world and make disciples. You see the call to deny yourself and take up the cross. You see the call not to love this world in terms of getting obsessed with the things of this world because they're all going to pass away. Instead, to love God with all your heart and your neighbor as yourself. You see the call to deal ruthlessly with sin and on and on and on. Many of you can quote these verses right back to me. how much of an effect do they have on you? How much of an effect do they have on me? Look, later today I'm scheduled to fly to Dallas for a day and then back home and then turn around and fly to Italy. I fly a lot. I've done overseas trips, probably 120, 130 or more different overseas trips, flying over the Atlantic both ways, flying over the Pacific both ways. So I've heard endless announcements on the plane. And I could recite some of them by heart, you know, and I know the rules, you know, seat backs up, trays in place, all electronic devices, anything with an on and off switch, off, seatbelt, buckle, fat. I know all that. I comply with all of that. But there's one announcement I've heard thousands of times, and I can't repeat it to you because partway through I tune it out. And it's telling me that in the unlikely event of a water landing, the cushion beneath my seat or something like that will turn into a flotation device. And then they go on. And I can't quote that whole thing to you, even though my memory is decent. And I've heard it, I'm sure, thousands of times. How come I can't? Because it strikes me as completely irrelevant. It strikes me as utterly irrelevant. What do I mean? Well, first, I've flown all those times and it's never applied. I've been on several thousand flights, I guess, and it's never once applied. So, as opposed to the seatbelt thing always applies and all the other rules always apply, this is never applied. And secondly, my assumption is if we have a water landing over the Atlantic or over the Pacific, I don't have to worry about the flotation device, the cushion. The only thing I have to do is be ready to meet the Lord. So it seems irrelevant to me. I would dare say that many of the teachings of the Bible, in particular, many of the teachings of Jesus, have the same effect on us as that announcement has on me, in one ear and out the other. Do you know almost every book of the New Testament talks about persecution for the faith? Virtually every book of the New Testament talks about persecution, opposition for following Jesus. Not, oh, I got sick because I'm a follower of Jesus or I got in a car wreck. No, I'm talking about persecution, opposition. And yet we read most of the verses in Jesus saying, if the world calls me Beelzebub, they call the master of the house Beelzebub, what are they going to call you, the servants of the household? Then we read that, oh, well, hang on. He's saying the world's going to treat us the way it treated him. For the most part, friends, I'm not saying this to condemn. I'm saying this to help awaken. These go in one ear and out the other. Yet if you talk to believers in many other parts of the world, you don't have to explain what that means to them because they're hated and despised and mocked and persecuted and threatened and even killed for the gospel. No, I'm not looking for that to happen. I'm not trying to provoke a fight. We're supposed to be peacemakers, not troublemakers. But I recognize that something is profoundly wrong when the Church of America could be as large as it is, as prosperous as it is, as influential as it is, and America is in moral down spiral, in a death spiral in so many ways on our watch. What does that mean? It means something has to change. Something has to change. I'm going to go to the phones momentarily, but let me give you a story that's kind of famous to my friends because I've shared it many times. Some years ago, and you may have heard me share it on the radio, some years ago, oh, over 10 years ago now, when we were living in Pensacola, Florida, Nancy noticed I'd put on a little weight. The schedule was so wild then, ministering 80 to 100 hours a week. I'd often eat just once a day, and that would be the end of the day, and then sometimes it would be a big meal. So just not the healthiest way to live. I wasn't exercising enough. She said, you know, I think you put a little weight on. I said, yeah, actually I have. You're exactly right, but I have a plan. She goes, oh, okay. Maybe 6 months go by, and she's just concerned for my health and, you know, being a good witness and so on. And she said, you know what? I don't think you've lost any weight. I said, no, you're absolutely right. I haven't. But, I've got a plan. She goes, oh, okay. 6 months, a year later, she said, honey, I think you've actually put on weight, not lost weight. I said, no, you're absolutely right, but I have a plan. And she said to me, your plan is not working. Now, we're both New Yorkers. Remember, we're New York Jews, so talk like that in our home is perfectly appropriate. She said, your plan is not working. I've always thought that that was a word I could quote to many of the church's ministries around the nation and right back in my own face many times spiritually. Your plan is not working. I know we've got our great plans. Maybe your church is growing. Maybe you got in a new building. Maybe different things are happening. Maybe a new door is open. But just look at where the nation's at on our watch. Our plan is not working. Things are getting worse. People are leaving the church. We have not had real serious national church growth on any level for many, many, many years overall. Our plan is not working. The good news is God has a better plan. God has a better plan. I'm going to get to your phone calls right when we come back, and then I want to talk to you about what that plan is and how to live it out, and what amazing audio clip I'm going to get in the next segment as well.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us with this focus all this week, in a special way, on Jesus' revolution. Today we're focusing on revolution in the church, changes that need to come in our lives. And as they come in our lives, in our church structure and ministry, the way that we operate, then we will see change come to society. Tomorrow we'll talk more about that tipping point, about drawing a line in the sand. Just exhort you and strengthen you tomorrow. And then Thursday, God willing, we'll focus on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on the issue of recovering Jewish roots as a revolutionary act as we are now in the Passover season. 866-34-TRUTH. I read a statement on my website by David saying a true revolution would put tens of thousands of Christians in jail. If suddenly all the Christians in America came out of the closet, run ashamed, explains what happens, kids would get put out of schools, teachers would get fired. But it would take something like that to bring freedom back to the believers, but there'd be such a heavy price, and I don't think anyone wants to pay it. I asked if you agree or disagree with that. Adam in New York City, you're up first. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown. I appreciate your hard work and taking my call.
You bet. Thank you.
I would be willing to go to jail. I'm an ex-high school dropout, ex-gang member, ex-drug addict, but I am a conservative Republican with, I believe in the conservative values, strictly because I'm loyal to the scriptures more than I would a Democratic Party. I also think, you know, some like, there are more like me. There are a lot like me. But they often leave the church or the state from which they live in because there's no work. And then we see politicians get up on the media or stage and they pick and choose scriptures to fit their agenda. And it seems like they help out red states, and they forget that, you know, there might be a small number of us, but we're in blue states also, and, you know, they're not helping.
You know what happens, Adam?
From which I live in.
Yeah, you know what really happens, though, to tell you the truth, is that politicians, there's some that are really fighting for good causes and that are really honorable people through and through. And I'm not saying that every politician waffles, but many times we see this consistently, that someone is elected based on certain ideals, but if those ideals are not popular, they then don't enforce them. And I'll say this as a white evangelical, that white evangelicals are constantly disappointed with Republican candidates because the Republican candidates will promise us they're going to do all these wonderful things for righteousness and so on. And then when they get elected, many times they do very little. I'm not praising Democrats here at all. I'm simply making a negative statement on the Republican side. The fact is, I will pray for politicians to do the right thing. I will write to them when it's appropriate. I will get involved in the election process unless it's impossible to vote in good conscience. But I'm absolutely not looking to the politicians to bring about the change that we need. Absolutely not. The Democratic Party has made it clear in so many ways it stands against fundamental values of family and life. The Republican Party has been consistently weak in implementing these things. So, Adam, it's up to you and me. The same way before we were saved, we gave ourselves to drugs with idiotic abandonment. Now, with sober minds, we need to give ourselves to God just that deeply. And I believe that's exactly what your heart is to do. So keep listening, Adam, and we will keep giving you courage, strength, guidance in the Lord. Thank you, sir, for the call. D in Winchester, Virginia, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello, thank you for taking my call, Dr. Brown.
You're welcome.
In regards to the posting that you had on your website, I agree and I disagree.
Go ahead.
I agree that the type of revolution that the poster describes, most people would have a problem with that, because I think when people think of revolution, that's what they're thinking. You know, they're going to go to jail and they're going to lose their home and all of that kind of thing. But there's another kind of revolution, I believe, that doesn't have, it's not like that for everybody. Just an everyday kind of existence as a believer. And it's something as simple as I have two children, and every year for Valentine's Day, the kids all give each other valentines. And one of my sons came home, and he came home with a valentine from one of his classmates. And I was so surprised where, you know, her valentine said, "Jesus loves you. Jesus loves you." And I thought, wow, you know, as a mom, that made me think, wow, you know, here, you know, this mother, you know, had enough guts. I thought about that, but then I'm like, oh, is it offensive?
Right.
You know, how would the teacher accept that? Do they even allow that?
Yeah, all the things we think about. Indeed, let me just jump in, because I've got a break here, but you're 100% right. Absolutely 100% right. And in fact, I'll talk about it tomorrow. If each of us would just do what we can do, would get involved praying, would get involved standing for righteousness, would pour certain values into our kids, would make certain counterculture decisions, if each of us would do that, we would see change. I'm 100% with you, without question. I also want to say, though, because of the way society's going, it's going to force us to stand for righteousness, and many will be persecuted for their faith and go to jail. I absolutely believe, though, that there are millions of Christian Americans ready to do that rather than compromise, because things have gone so far. But Dee, you're 100% right. I agree with you. First and foremost, we've got to live this out every day, starting in our home with our personal lives, our families, and our places of business. So thank you for saying that. And you speak for so many with kids in school. So thank you for the call. Sorry, I've got to run though. All right, friends, I try not to do this. I said I was going to play an audio clip. I've got to play it in the next half hour. My profound apologies. So if you were sitting in the car waiting, well, and you got to go to your appointment, you can listen later today. Go to AskDrBrown.org, click on the Line of Fire. You can listen to the whole show, all 2 hours. And then make sure you read the message, A Dangerous and Deadly Deception, that we've posted the link to it on my Line of Fire website. What can I say? I have been so eager to get these books, Revolution and Revolution in the Church, into the hands of you, my listeners, and we finally have them in digital form. I mean, these books will rock your world. These books will shake you and light a fire in you and give you vision and even practical strategies as well. The books in print, $32. However, you can now get them in ebook form. Even if you don't have your own e-reader, all you need is a smartphone or a computer or a tablet. $15.99 for both books. Call this number to order. This is, yes, a limited introductory offer. Seriously, it is. 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Or you can order online, AskDrBrown.org. Click on the online bookstore and you'll see this special offer for Revolution and Revolution in the Church at less than half price in digital form. You'll also get a really neat reader, the Verso reader, as well for free. 1-800-278-9978. Back with some audio clips that will stir you.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
How can we change the world if we ourselves are not changed? If you are out of shape and I'm going to help get you in shape and exercise with you, if I'm more out of shape than you are, how am I going to lead the way? If we're living like the world, how are we going to change the world? The good news is Jesus came not only to save us from hell, but to save us from sin and to change us. That's the power of the gospel. That's the power of the Spirit. That's the power of grace. So as we are changed, we go and change our world. 866-348-7884 to join the discussion. Have you heard the news? Just some general national news before we refocus on revolution in the church. There is someone who is now going by the name of Calliope Wong. I'm not sure if Calliope is the original name or not. But Calliope Wong is a high school senior born male. Not born ambiguously that you don't know if the child is male or female. Male. Well, Calliope Wong now identifies as a woman. And he sent an application into Smith College, which is an all-female school. But, and of course, the news report, ABC News, says her papers, because Calliope says he's a girl, then Calliope is a she. I feel terrible for people like this. I hear this, my heart goes out to them. I don't gloat in this. I think this person really needs the Lord and really needs healing and wholeness in the inside and maybe more. Calliope has applied to all-female college. And the all-female college has declined Calliope. Why? Because Calliope is a male, not a female. But in the admissions materials, she describes herself as female. Smith College has told her it cannot process her admission application as a female because the gender markers on her forms conflict. Wong said the college is discriminating against her. I'm reading from the report. The college says it's about paperwork, and Wong is free to reapply. Smith, an all-female college, does not decide who is a woman. Rather, with regard to admission, it uses information provided by the applicant, according to the policy statement posted on the college website. So, if Calliope somehow had some documentation that now said that Calliope is no longer a man but a woman, even if Calliope, to all observers, would still be male, dressing as a female, and Calliope would get into an all-female college. You think that's what was intended when they started the school? Oh, listen. There was a girls' rowing team, was it? One of these schools, I quote it in A Queer Thing Happened to America, a girls' rowing team, and they dropped the name girls because when people would shout, go girls, they didn't like that because some of them identified as males. This is what we've come to as New Jersey is discussing making it illegal, as we talked about yesterday, making it illegal for a child with unwanted same-sex attraction to get professional counseling and therapy, even with the help of and approval of parents. We have insane situations like this, even a move to get someone's birth certificate changed. What is this, like Time Machine? You go back in history and say, because this person now perceives themselves to be male, even though they were born female, we're not going to change the birth certificate. Why is this happening? Sleeping church, sleeping compromised church. The revolution begins with us. All right, I will. I absolutely will play these sound bites for you when we come back. And one in particular from a young lady named Grace you don't want to miss.
The line. Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on the Line of Fire as we talk about revolution in the church. Change must come with us. Friends, look, let's start here. If we see sin in the world, are we dealing with sin in our own lives? If we see immorality in the world, are we dealing with immorality in our own lives? If we see corruption in the world, are we dealing with corruption in our own lives? If we see irresponsibility in the world, are we dealing with irresponsibility in our own lives? If we see compromise in the world, are we dealing with compromise in our own lives? Let the revolution, let the radical change start there. Start with you. Start with me. 866-348-7884. Okay, before I go back to the phones, I want to play two clips for you. Children are being put right in the middle of the debate over same-sex so-called marriage. I say so-called not to demean gay or lesbian couples that care for each other and care for their kids, but simply to say it's not marriage. It's not marriage in God's sight. It's not what marriage was intended to be. And we dare not tamper with marriage as the Supreme Court is being presented with these very massively important cases today and tomorrow, with decisions expected sometime around June. In fact, Justice Kennedy, who's the swing vote, the expected swing vote in both the Prop 8, the California case, and DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act case, asked a question today in terms of Prop 8, and an attorney intimately involved with the proceedings told me he asked questions that kind of went both ways. But he asked one question about California, where you've got 40,000 kids who are in same-sex households, and what about them, and how are they affected by this? And that's one question he asked the conservative attorney speaking on our side of the issues. So kids are brought right in the middle of this. So on the one hand, yeah, what does a 12-year-old or 11-year-old know in terms of what's best in family? Of course, they know a lot. But they're not the ones that are going to lecture us necessarily on what's right and what's wrong. And yet, there may be some things they have to say that are profoundly right or profoundly wrong. So first, I want you to hear a sixth grader. He's 12 years old. Matthew Lannan. He's testifying before Rhode Island Senate Judiciary Committee, and he is in favor of redefining marriage. And he's got two moms and two dads. Obviously, a mom and dad, presumably divorced. I say obviously, presumably divorced, and now the mom with her lesbian partner and the dad with the gay partner. And this is what he has to say, and for him it's all about love.
Both my moms and my dads have been together for 14 years. And I think about what marriage means to me. I think it's about two people that love each other. My parents certainly fit that description. Although they can't legally marry, their commitments are very, very real. My parents have stayed together through sickness and health, through thick and thin, through good times and bad. So even though I am only 12, I have some ideas of what's important to me. I want to be someone who knows no discrimination. I want to become a man who doesn't judge someone by the color of their skin, their gender, or who they love. I want to use the gift I was given to help make the world a better place. In closing, here's what I believe. There's one thing you don't mess with in life, it's love. My parents and all the other gay and lesbian people here just want to be happy, just like you. All they want is to be treated fairly. But unlike most of you, they have to come here again, year after year, and explain over and over why their love is equal to yours. This year, you have the opportunity to change that. I say, choose love.
All right, that would be a very typical argument for the redefinition of marriage side. It's all about love and happiness. One of the Supreme Court justices actually raised that question today, I believe, when they were cross-examining or oral arguments were being presented for the redefinition of marriage side, and questions were being raised to them by one justice who said, well, if it's about love and happiness, then what can you say to polygamous people or incestuous people? In other words, if it's two adults or three adults or four and they simply want to be happy, if that's what it's about, and that's since marriage equality for all, then how can you argue against it? And effectively, you can't. Effectively, You can't. And the argument that was given, that I heard, the response that was given, sounded to me extremely weak. And by the way, I guess I'm missing something there. If the mom and dad have been, the dad with his male partner and the mom with her female partner have been together 14 years and the kid's 12, then was it artificial insemination? I don't know. I mean, that's raised all kinds of other issues. Well, there's an 11-year-old, Grace Evans in Minnesota, who testified, and she's got long hair in a braid and just very composed 11-year-old. This 12-year-old boy seemed very composed as well. And you'll hear a couple of pauses. What's happening is she's asking the lawmakers a question and then looking at them for a response that she doesn't get it. And then she asks again and looks for a response and doesn't get it. So listen to what she has to say.
Ms. Evans, please introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Grace Evans, and I want to thank you for letting me speak today. Even though I'm only 11 years old, I know that everyone deserves to have a mom and a dad. If you change the law that says two moms or two dads could get married, it would take away something very important for children like me across the state. My mom is very important to me because she teaches me about things about being a girl. She is kind, thoughtful, gentle, and beautiful. She cares for me and others and listens very well to things I want to talk to her about. I am learning from her to be a good woman, wife, and mother someday. Even though I learned some of these things from my dad, my mom teaches them in a very special way. Without my mom, it would be very hard for me to learn them. She is my role model on how to be a girl, and I love her very much. My dad is also very important to me because he protects me and helps me get the confidence to be a girl who is growing up to be a woman. He takes care of problems in a way that my mom cannot, just like my mom wouldn't be able to be the woman she is without my dad. I wouldn't be able to be the woman I want to be without my dad. Because he is strong, wise, and different than my mom, I learned things from him that I would not be able to learn in the same way from my mom. Since every child needs a mom and a dad to be born, I don't think we can change that children need a mom and a dad. I believe God made it that way. I know some disagree, but I want to ask you this question. Which parent do I not need, my mom or my dad?
She's looking around now, the lawmakers.
I'll ask again, which parent do I not need, my mom or my dad?
She's looking at him now, looking around. No response.
I hope that you can see that every child needs a mom and a dad. Please don't change your law on marriage to say otherwise. Thank you for letting me speak today.
Thank you for your testimony.
Yeah, yeah. How wonderful. How wonderful. You got to watch that video. In fact, Matt, just put the link up to it in the Line of Fire website for today. So go to AskDrBrown.org, click on the Line of Fire, and you'll see it in the comments section. Matt will post that. Absolutely. People said, oh, she says people are going to try to take away her mom. I said, no, that wasn't her point. And I think it's a real simple thing. Since it takes a mom and dad to make a baby, why not think it takes a mom and dad to raise a baby? Isn't that at least ideal? 866-34-TRUTH, Charles in Washington, D.C. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, my name is Charles. I'm from Washington, D.C. And by the way, I listen to you as often as I can.
Well, thank you, sir.
Yes, and I thank God for you. I'm also familiar with Messianic Judaism, and I've done about 30 years worth of study on it on my own. And I thank God for you, and I see indeed a coming together of Messianic Jews and Gentile believers more and more as time winds down. Before Christ comes back, I do believe this is prophetic, that, you know, this is a snowballing thing, and it's the Lord's move of the Spirit. So I thank God for your ministry, and I'm well acquainted with the Jewish roots of Christianity.
Yeah, and Charles, I'm so blessed to hear you've been studying that all those years. You may have been studying it before I was, in fact,
I was
focused on it, because, you know, Jewish believer, but I wasn't aware of some of the implications, but there has to be a joining together because each perspective brings something. Unique perspective, male, female, black, white, young, old, rich, poor, Jew, Gentile, especially Jew, Gentile. we bring something unique to the equation. And as we come together, especially we need to get back to the Word and to spiritual foundations and even the importance of God's law. Not that everyone's supposed to be keeping the Levitical commandments of dietary laws and things, but the foundational importance of God's law that's now written on our hearts to live out, society desperately needs. And hey, Charles, just a reminder, as you're listening on Wava FM from 2 to 2:30, from 2:30 to 3, you can catch the rest of the show on Wava AM through the graciousness of the station there. But thanks for the call. You are right on, sir. And it's going to take this coming together to withstand the onslaught of darkness. We'll be back and tell you more about where the church needs to change.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Harry Truman said this: when even one American who has done nothing wrong is forced by fear to shut his mind and close his mouth, then all Americans are in peril. When we are being told that we cannot hold to foundational biblical convictions, to foundational definitions of marriage and family, when believers, when churches, when individuals are intimidated to speak, are threatened with lawsuits, are told you cannot hold to your convictions, simple convictions that America has lived by since its inception, much of the world has lived by as the only thing it has known, as long as there is recorded history. When we are told, if you hold to your views, there will be a price to pay, something is fundamentally wrong. Something is fundamentally wrong, meaning our religious liberties, freedoms of conscience, freedoms of speech are under legitimate attack, and we must speak now or forever hold our peace, or have to apologize to our kids and grandkids. Michael Brown, welcome back to the Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH. In my book, Revolution in the Church, I lay out systematic ways to bring about change in the church that will then bring about change in the society. And after I lay out how the theme of revolution is everywhere in the society, this is even going back to the early 2000s, I bring a wake-up call. We cannot afford to sleep our way through another revolution. Listen to what Tom Skinner said in 1970, evangelist Tom Skinner. I'm convinced America is at her crisis hour. Revolution is inevitable. It's just a matter of which faction is going to prove strongest and will win out in the end. I believe, Tom Skinner said, most Americans are so apathetic they will just sit back and go to whomever wins the struggle. And that's what happened. That's why we find ourselves in the place we are today. And then I begin to lay out strategies of change. The first, the church is not a building and the family is not a house. It's not so much a matter of going to church as much as being the church. Yes, I believe in corporate gatherings. Yes, it's great to have buildings, use them for the glory of God. But the New Testament emphasis is not on going to church, but being the church. Going to church, you can do in a couple of hours a week, or if you've got a quick service, you can be in and out in an hour. And maybe you pay your dues and you go home. No, being the church is 24/7. The ones that want to bring about change just don't go to meetings. They become part of a movement, which leads me to the next point. The body is not an audience, and the preacher is not a performer. It's not a matter of going to a religious meeting where someone is going to put on a performance, and again, we pay our dues, we like it, a great performance by the worship team, a great message by the pastor, and we leave unchanged. No, we hear these things, we encounter God in worship, so that we will then go and bring about change. Wolfgang Simpson, in Houses That Changed the World, said the image of much of contemporary Christianity could be summarized as holy people coming regularly to a holy place on a holy day at a holy hour to participate in a holy ritual led by a holy man dressed in holy clothes for a holy fee. Martin Luther said all Christians are truly priests and there is no distinction amongst them except as to office. Everybody who is baptized may maintain that he has been consecrated as a priest, bishop, or pope. you say these are good quotes. Yeah, they're in my Revolution in the Church book. So the emphasis must be not so much on going to church as much as on being the church. We cannot just think of ourselves as the audience and the preachers, the performer. No, no, we are part of a movement. We are a holy army, and we fight with the principles of Jesus, overcoming hatred with love, overcoming evil with good, overcoming the intimidation of the world with the gracious love and sacrifice of Jesus, with broken hearts and backbones of steel. And then another area where we need to bring about change in the church is to understand that every one of us is called to be a disciple. Every one of us is called to be a disciple. Brennan Manning in The Signature of Jesus said this, if indeed we lived a life in imitation of his, our witness would be irresistible. If we dared to live beyond our self-concern, if we refused to shrink from being vulnerable, if we took nothing but a compassionate attitude toward the world, if we were a counterculture to our nation's lunatic lust for pride of place, power, and possessions, if we preferred to be faithful rather than successful, the walls of indifference to Jesus Christ would crumble. A handful of us could be ignored by society, but hundreds, thousands, millions of such servants would overwhelm the world. Christians filled with the authenticity, commitment, and generosity of Jesus would be the most spectacular sign in the history of the human race. The call of Jesus is revolutionary. If we implemented it, we would change the world in a few months. I believe that. It's a matter of going to the scriptures and taking God's word seriously. It's a matter of going to God and saying, Lord, here I am, send me, use me. It's a matter of saying, Lord, I'm not here primarily for my job. I'm not here primarily for finances. I'm not primarily here to have a nice home. And I'm not primarily here even to have a nice family in and of itself. I'm here to be your servant and to make a difference and to be a world changer and to help equip every member of my family to bring life to a dying and hurting world. Here we are, send us, here I am, send me. And then day by day, we live it out step at a time. Don't worry about the things a million miles down the road. Don't worry about 20 years from now. Don't worry about the impossible things that seem so far out there. Just where you live, who you are, give yourself to God afresh and trust me. You'll see difference and you'll see opposition and you'll be encouraged by both because you'll know it's the Lord. And that's what will drive you more to prayer, to seeking God, and to taking on the character of Jesus. Friends, get hold of Revolution in the Church and Revolution. These books will rock your world. You want something to light a fire in you? You want something to give you fresh vision and full of substance with quote after quote from the Word and from different leaders that will keep your fire burning for years to come? You can get the two books now. They are available digitally. The paperback together $32, but you can order them digitally. This is the first time we've been able to offer them in ebook form, so you can read them on your smartphone, you can read them on your computer, your tablet. And when you call, we just need an email address because you'll be emailed the instructions for download. Normally $32, but to get them in ebook form, $15.99, so a little under half price, and it's a special introductory offer. And the ebook reader that you get for your phone, for your computer, or tablet, is specially made to work with scripture and so on. So call us right now, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978, or go online to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. When you go there, just click on the online bookstore. You get more information. You can then click to have the info sent to you to download the books. You'll be blessed by these for years to come. Some of the quotes I just read are more than enough to keep you going, and there are dozens and dozens of such quotes throughout the book. 1-800-278-9978. If you can help us with an additional gift for the radio broadcast, for our world outreach, for our Jewish ministry, that would mean so much to us. My bottom line today, how about we quit pointing fingers and making accusations about how bad it is out there? And how about, with the help of the Lord, we go about bringing about change in here where we live? Oh, it's easy to look at what's wrong out there, but you know, before there can be a revolution in society, there must first be a revolution in the church, and that means change for you and me.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I've got a question for you. It's ancient world. You've got a watchman in his post. The watchman is asleep. He's supposed to be awake and watching. He's tired because he didn't manage his time properly. He's tired because he gorged himself with food and drink before getting up in his post. And what happens is an invading army comes in unaware, and by the time the people realize what's happening, it's too late and their city falls. Is it the fault of the invading army or is it the fault of the watchman? Oh, the invading army is there. But if the watchman had done his job, if he'd been alert and sounded the alarm, then the city was more than prepared to defend itself. Friends, we are the watchmen in the society today. We are the ones who are supposed to be sons and daughters of Issachar, according to 1 Chronicles 12:32, that image there. Those who understand the times and know what Israel should do. Those who understand the times and know what God's people should do. We should be the ones leading the way in change, setting the example. But because so much of the salt has lost its saltiness, we have fallen short, and that's why society is so messed up. The good news is, if we failed in certain ways, and that's brought about the degeneration of our society, if we can turn back to God and get our act together with his help and grace, who knows what kind of societal change could come? Yeah, long intro. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. This entire week, we are focusing in particular on the theme of Jesus' revolution, which is always near to us, Jesus changing us, and we go by his grace and help and change the world. Not through worldly means, not through guns and knives and hatred and intimidation, but through the weapons of righteousness, through self-sacrifice, through compassion, through care, through overcoming evil with good, overcoming hatred with love, blessing those who curse us, praying for those who persecute us, and showing the world a better way. And I want to focus on that today, revolution in the church, where the changes need to come in us that can then go and impact the world. And in case you have missed this, this week, today and tomorrow, the Supreme Court is taking up the question of redefining marriage in two different cases, massively important. A tipping point in so many ways. The fact it's even going to the courts is massively important. Al Mohler writes about it. Marriage in the dock. The Supreme Court considers same-sex marriage. And he says this: the next 2 days are destined to stand among the most significant days in our nation's constitutional history. But the issues at stake reach far beyond the U.S. Constitution. Nothing less than marriage is in the dock, with the nation's highest court set to consider two cases that deal with the question of the legalization of same-sex marriage. The first time the issue of same-sex marriage came before the court back in 1972, the court dismissed the question succinctly. The appeal is dismissed for want of a substantial federal question. But now, the Supreme Court is faced with two cases that demand a more substantial response. One case deals with a challenge to the constitutionality of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA. The other addresses Proposition 8, the amendment to the California Constitution defining marriage as the union of a man and a woman. And friends, this is all happening on our watch. If the church had taken marriage more seriously, if we had not allowed for rampant heterosexual, no-fault divorce and the degeneration of moral values in the church, this discussion would not be happening before the Supreme Court today.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I love this quote by John Muncy. You'll never be able to speak against sin if you're entertained by it. You'll never be able to speak against sin if you're entertained by it. Michael Brown, welcome back to the Line of Fire. 866-348-7884. Please take a minute when you have a break, not when you're driving in your car, but when you have a break, go to my website, AskDrBrown.org, click on the Line of Fire, and you'll see a link to my latest article, A Dangerous and Deadly Deception. In the few hours it's been out, just on one page, it's been shared more than 1,000 times, more than 1,100 times already. There's an interest in this. I may share a bit of the article with you later, but it's disturbing, the level of deception that's in the body today. Even some people who are claiming, even when they sin, that they're not really sinning. It's that serious. 866-348. Some have gone completely off the deep end to the point that they claim to have redeemed profanity, so they use it constantly because it's now holy. I'm talking about sicko stuff. Let me just say this. If you're anywhere near garbage like that, associating on any level with garbage like that, aside from trying to help people deliver from deception, get out of there. Run. 866-34-TRUTH. Leonard Ravenhill said, the holy book of the living God suffers more from its exponents today than from its opponents. I would say that's true. I've said many times over that no fault heterosexual divorce in the church has done more to destroy and undermine marriage than all gay activists put together. And I genuinely believe that. The good news is that if we messed up, we can fix things. The good news is if we humble ourselves before God and look to Him earnestly and with holy desperation, He can bring awakening and change. But it's going to start with you and me. There may be more upheaval than we expect, but won't it be worth it? When that holy upheaval comes and it gets you so much closer to the Lord, when that holy upheaval comes and you find yourself so deeply in love with Jesus, when that holy upheaval comes and shackles that have held you down are now gone, isn't it worth it? And if you get rejected and mocked for the gospel, there's joy, and you actually know that you're helping people, even if they're against you, because you're living for the truth and standing for the truth. 866-348-7884. I've got a whole lot to share with you, and some more audio clips I want to play for you as well. But first, to the phones, Eric in Massapequa on Long Island. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire today.
Yes, I'm a fellow Messianic Jew. Hello.
Hey.
I got a quick thing. How can anyone believe that you could change the definition of a word and everything's fine? Why can't they have a civil union with all equal protection under the law? Why do they have to have the word marriage? Because a marriage, that's like changing any word in the definition. Like the word orange means blue now. Like, can we do that? You follow
my Eric,
point?
Of course. And I totally agree with you. Now, the bizarre thing is, to some that sounds bigoted and hateful. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the fact that marriage has always had a certain definition. You know, if I say 1 + 1 = 2, that's math. If I say A, B, C, D, E, F, that's spelling. So they're distinct things. So if I talk about two men coming together or two women coming together, that's not marriage. The fact is, there's several things involved. One is that you have two men or two women who love each other and say, well, why shouldn't our love, our union be recognized by the society? And why shouldn't we have the same benefits? And, you know, one thing I tell them is I didn't marry my wife for any benefits, government benefits or government recognition or anything. If the government mocked every step we took and penalized us for it, we'd still get married nonetheless. But
right.
And we'd be married in God's sight. But some say, look, you know, it's discriminatory because our love is the same and we're paying taxes and we're raising families and we're doing all of that. But there's also the long-term gay activist approach, which has been documented for many, many years, which is if you can change the definition of marriage, then you've won. If you can change something
right.
that fundamental, so now
right.
it becomes genderless, so that you have, you know, partner A and partner B, or parent A and parent B, when it becomes that, you've now struck at the very essential foundational institution of human life, marriage and family, and now you've struck at the very definition of gender and gender distinction. So, yeah, on what basis is the word being redefined? Since when
That's
was it just
point.
A matter of two people coming together? And
right.
one of the
can
go
I
ahead.
Just say something? What I'm interested in that I know that the biggest issue I thought that is that we're not treated equal protection under the law. Well, if you have a civil union that recognizes equal protection under the law with all the benefits of marriage, but you don't change the definition of the word. That's my point. How come that hasn't been spoken, you know, by defendants on either side as a legitimate situation?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Generally speaking, when you have a situation where gay activists have said, if we have civil unions, we'll be happy with that, no sooner do they have civil unions where they say this is discriminatory because it's still not marriage and society still doesn't look at us the same way and the benefits still aren't the same. So it almost never works in that direction, to be perfectly honest with you. From my viewpoint, to grant civil unions is to say the government should legitimize this relationship, and there's no reason for it. There's no calling on the government to legitimize every relationship, every union. And then once you do establish that, it just becomes the platform to the next. It becomes harder to say no to redefining marriage. But that's the fundamental question, Eric. Where is it written? And one of the justices raised this question today during the oral presentations at the Supreme Court. One of my attorney friends filled me in. Basically, the question was asked, if there is a constitutional right for a man to marry a man or a woman to marry a woman, and that right has been taken away, when was that right given? When in our constitutional history
right.
or in the writing of our amendments was it given? It's never been here. And there
right.
is no possible way to hold the ground if you say marriage is just the union of two people. Whoa, who said two? Marriage is the union of a man and a woman, not just two people.
Right.
You've got a plug, a male and female plug,
right?
And they're made a certain way and they have a certain function. So biologically, by design, men are made one way, women another way. Emotionally,
right.
Different things. And just as I played a quote in the last hour from an 11-year-old girl testifying before legislators in Minnesota, when she said, look, it takes a mother and father to produce a child. Exactly. That
right.
hasn't changed.
Exactly.
You still need those ingredients. So I debated Professor Eric Small last year at the University of Central Florida. No, I'm sorry, year before last. Even to do the debate, Eric, we had to have four armed policemen. We were required by the university to have four armed policemen present. Five
wow.
school vice presidents, I was told, were directly involved in the decision whether to have it or not. The day before the debate, there was a conference call involving 11 people, not me, as to whether to go on with it. Gay activists, some vice presidents trying to shut it down. They finally concluded that it would be worse publicity to not hold it than hold it. And it was just a discussion. Same-sex marriage,
right.
should it be legal? Between two professors on a college campus.
Wow.
Christian groups would not sponsor it. The professor that booked a room for us was threatened with loss of her job, I was told, for just booking
wow.
the room. That is how crazy and severe this has gotten. So I just asked the professor. I said, I'm not arguing about polygamy or anything else, but just please tell me why marriage requires two people. I mean, last year a woman married herself, had a ceremony and married herself. Her 11-year-old son said, Mom, I love you, but you're embarrassing me. The only sober words spoken that day that were quoted.
Right.
Why does it take two? Why not one? Why not three?
Why not 100?
Right. So, and he said, well, I've made an agreement not to discuss polygamy or incest. So he was completely lacking in his responses there. But
right,
Eric, hey,
right.
I've got to run. We got to break. But we've got to stay with that. And that's why, by the way, I refer to this as best as I can as redefinition of marriage, and then I'll refer to same-sex so-called marriage, or put marriage in quotes, so that we don't lose that reality. All right, God bless, Eric.
God bless. Bye.
Let's keep our heads screwed on straight, friends, because the world is getting increasingly crazy. When we come back, I want to talk to you about things that we can do to bring about change in the church, starting where we live. If you're a pastor, if you're pastoring a church of 10,000, if you're leading a home group of 10 people, if you're raising your family, if you're a single person, what I want to say applies to you. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Do you know it was Thomas Jefferson? Thomas Jefferson, one of the fathers of the American Revolution, independence movement, and a man intimately involved in the American Revolution. You know, he said every generation needs a new revolution. Every generation needs its own revolution. Otherwise, we stagnate. No, I'm not talking about rebellion against the government and taking up arms. God forbid, if you thought this is a, you know, an extent, this broadcast is sponsored by the NRA and we've got a rifle sale for our resource offer. No, no, we encourage you to buy our books and CDs and DVDs and things like that. That's the revolution we're talking about. One of moral, cultural, spiritual substance. And I'm not attacking the NRA. I'm simply saying that that's not what we're about here. Not that kind of revolution. But the fact is, we can easily stagnate. And then rather than becoming part of the solution, we become part of the problem. The reason America's messed up, church is messed up. The reason the church is messed up, leaders in the church are messed up. We as leaders get our acts in order. The church gets its acts in order. We get back to the scripture. We throw away a lot of the nonsense gospel that's out there. The all about me gospel, the gospel of self, the gospel of empowerment, the gospel of how to make me into a bigger and better me. Instead of that trash, we get back to the gospel of the cross. Deny yourself, take up the cross, follow Jesus. And then you find out your real purpose. Then you find out what life is really about. Then when you go against the grain and swim against the tide of a sinning world, then you've got something to offer. Oh, yeah. 866-348-7884. Let me read a quote I read in the first hour. David posted it on my Line of Fire page. A true evolution would put tens of thousands of Christians in jail. Do you agree with that or not? A true Jesus revolution would end up putting tens of thousands of Christians in jail. If suddenly all the Christians in America came out of the closet and were unashamed, students praying in school and writing about Jesus in the Bible in English class, students would get expelled from their schools. And Christian teachers being open about their faith in school, they'd get fired too. But it would take something like that to bring freedom back to the believers, but there'd be such a heavy price, I don't think anyone wants to pay it. Do you agree with that? 866-348-7884. Do you think it would take something like that? You think that kids would get kicked out of schools, not for being disobedient and irresponsible and nasty, but just for holding to their rights and freely speaking about Jesus and not allowing for freedom from religion when what was intended was freedom of religion by the founders? Do you think people would get fired from their jobs for just living out a consistent Christian faith? And do you think that very few would be willing to pay this price? Or do you think people would be willing? What's your take? 866-348-7884. Let me just go through a couple of testimonies as the Supreme Court is looking at these major momentous issues about the potential of redefining marriage. This is from NPR, National Public Radio, which you generally do not listen to for inspiration, but talking about the role of kids in this whole discussion about redefining marriage. Joey, clip number three.
Opponents have long argued that kids' best interests require both a mom and a dad. Now, as NPR's Jennifer Ludden reports, the children of same-sex couples say the evidence shows something else.
2 years ago, this video of a young man testifying in the Iowa legislature went viral.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. My name is Zach Walls. I'm a sixth-generation Iowan and an engineering student at the University of Iowa, and I was raised by two women.
Walls told lawmakers he was a top student and an Eagle Scout.
The sexual orientation of my parents has had zero effect on the content of my character. Thank you very much.
You know, his video went viral. And he may be a fine young man, and the two women that raised him may love him very dearly. I'm just wondering about how they shaped him to be the best father he could be. What role model they provided for him as to how a man treats a woman. Where his life might have been if he was raised by his biological mother and father, not just by his biological mother and her partner. And what are his own views about sexual orientation and morality? Do we know those things? And did anyone question that two moms raising a kid or two dads raising a kid couldn't raise a kid that'd be a fine kid in many ways? I mean, were we actually saying that such a kid did not exist? And yet this has been like, the big revelation. I mean, what's the big revelation? That you can have a decent, achieving kid raised by two moms and two dads? Did we doubt that? Clip number four.
When we saw that video, we knew that he was just the tip of the iceberg.
Steve Majors is with the gay advocacy group Family Equality Council. It's filed an amicus brief with the Supreme Court highlighting the stories of people like Walls, the first generation raised by openly gay and lesbian parents. He notes that just yesterday, the American Academy of Pediatrics came out in support of same-sex marriage as good for kids.
Yeah, the American Academy of Pediatrics has been so much in the back pocket of gay activism for, well, as long as I've been tracking it, that quite a large number of those involved with it left and started their own organization. Left and started their own organization. And they, with their own research and studies they followed, have come to very, very different conclusions. You know what's fascinating? You know what's fascinating? And I document this in A Queer Thing Happened to America. When people were asked, when these studies were done, and, you know, how the kids achieve in school, how this and this and this, a lot of the studies were too limited to bring forth positive information that could really be used in a fair way. And then some wrongly compared, say, two lesbian moms with a single mom for outcomes. But what's fascinating, and gay activists even admitted, they said, oh, yeah, these kids were more prone to have gender identity confusion, more prone to cross sexual lines and experiment earlier on, and even a higher percentage of gay or lesbian kids as an outcome from being raised in these homes. But they said, we didn't report that because that wasn't a negative. That was, to us, a positive. And then others have done detailed studies and been threatened with loss of job for doing it that have said, actually, the outcome is anything but positive overall when you look en masse what is best for kids, a mom and a dad, or two moms versus two dads. Wouldn't common sense alone tell you that? Friends, it's up to us, the church, to live this out in such a way that if the world does not have common sense, we have divine wisdom, and we bring that divine wisdom to the world. Do you have my books, Revolution and Revolution in the Church? If not, they are now for the first time available in digital form. You can read them on your iPhone. You can read them on any smartphone, computer, tablet. They come with a special reading app, the Verso reading app, for free. $32 to get them in print form, but in e-form, half price. It's a special introductory offer, $15.99. So call or order these, and you'll have them downloaded before the week is out. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or just go online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the online bookstore. Take advantage of this. These books will change your life.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you, thank you, thank you for joining us today on the line of fire. 866-348-7884. Come on, friends. If it's not time to stand up and go for it, when is it going to be time? If it's not raining enough now, speaking morally, speaking about societal decline, speaking about backsliding in the church, if it's not raining hard enough now to put up the umbrella, when are we going to do it? Michael Brown, welcome to your listener-supported revolutionary radio broadcast. Oh, I am so serious about revolution. Not the way the world does it. Not with hatred, not with violence, not with anger, not with intimidation, but the real revolution Jesus came to launch. I'll talk more about why I associate Jesus with revolution on tomorrow's broadcast, as we have a special focus on Jesus' revolution through this entire week. A Thursday's broadcast, The Revolution of Recovering Jewish Roots. 866-348-7884. Friends, this week we are so thrilled that my books Revolution and Revolution in the Church for the first time are now available as ebooks in digital form. I'll tell you about that later in the broadcast. And I fly out, God willing, on Thursday to Italy, my 21st time to Italy. For the first time, though, I'm ministering just to young people. Now, older folks will come. We've had many that have been close to us through the years, and they'll come to the meetings. But this is primarily for young people. It'll be teens up into probably in their 30s. And the theme is revolution. The theme is revolution. And they're really serious. They see the need for change. But where does it start? It starts with revolution in the church, doesn't it? It starts with revolution in the church. Now, Rosa Parks said this, of course, famous for the civil rights movement. What I found striking, by the way, is I have met with students in different settings, high school students and others, and said, how many know the name of Crystal Dixon? Crystal Dixon. I've asked about that, and no hands go up. They know Rosa Parks. They don't know Crystal Dixon. Crystal Dixon is another African-American woman. She was fired from her job as Vice President of Human Resources at the University of Toledo in Ohio because what? She took issue with an editorial in her local newspaper which equated same-sex black civil rights with gay rights. And as a black woman, she said, I differ. We should love all people. You know, as God's people, we should love all people. But I differ. I do not believe that homosexuality is the same as skin color. She explained why. It was printed as an op-ed piece, a letter to the editor, extended letter to the editor. And the university fired her for writing that in her private time. Who's heard of Crystal Dixon? Oh, a few of us. If you've listened to me or read my Queer Thing Happened to America books, you have. Have you heard of Rosa Parks? Sure. Who's heard of Crystal Dixon? Almost no one. Isn't that extraordinary? Isn't that extraordinary? Two courageous black American women, one of them hailed and known nationally for refusing to give up her seat to a white man on the bus and stood up in the face of discrimination and became a cause celeb for the civil rights movement, versus Crystal Dixon, who should be known to all of us as someone that did what was right, and as a result of it was fired from her job, and she did not retract her position or renounce it. Rosa Parks said this, each person must live their life as a model for others. Each person must live their life as a model for others. Isn't that simple? Isn't that what it comes down to? Follow me as I follow Jesus. You want to know what he's like? Look at me. And in fact, we come back. I want to tell you one of the most moving stories I ever read in a Richard Wurmbrand book. An extraordinary account of something that happened in the midst of horrific persecution in Romania. We come back and I'll get you your calls.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, just a shout out to Miranda Blue. Thanks so much for listening to the broadcast and keeping folks at Right Wing Watch appraised of what we're talking about here. You know, we talk about lots of other things, but yes, because these issues with homosexuality and gay activism are knocking at our door every day and before the courts, we do talk about them here on the radio. But Miranda, if you've never read my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, and don't want to spend the money to buy it, why don't you let us send you a free copy, all right? Just shoot us a note. We'd love to send you a free copy. This way you'll have material probably for weeks or months because it's like a 700-page book with 1,500 endnotes, and perhaps you'll get a little different perspective. But anyway, really, thank you so much for listening. It means a lot that you tune in. 866-348-7884. No, I wasn't being sarcastic. I'm glad she listens. As someone with a very, very different point of view, glad she listens as long as she quotes me accurately and doesn't edit things, you know, to cut certain words out or whatever, then yeah, sure. Let people know what we're saying. If I didn't believe in what I was saying, I wouldn't be on the air. 866-348-7884. To the phones, Patrick in West Bloomfield, Michigan. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I came across a publication from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. It was printed in 2012. The title is Top Health Issues for LGBT Populations Information and Resource Kit. And I wanted to quote just a one-sentence quote out of this document, and it, to me, is a really important issue. It says, quote, the title, the subtitle within the document, Gay Men and STDs, HIV/AIDS. It says, in 2006, MSM, which they describe MSM being an acronym used to identify men who have sex with men. So in 2006, MSM accounted for 48% of more than the 1 million people living with HIV in the United States and accounted for 53% of all newly diagnosed HIV infections in the United States. And the question I have is, why is no one talking about this from a public health standpoint? But this clearly is not a normal lifestyle, and it's something that in a time that we're living in now where everybody's concerned with people eating too much, they want to regulate what you drink as far as the size of your pop. And this, you know, this to me was just alarming.
Right. So why is virtually no one talking about it? The fact is, Patrick, the moment you raise these issues, and I've talked about them on the air here and I documented in A Queer Thing Happened to America, the moment you talk about it, you are attacked in the worst possible way. You are called a closet homosexual. You are told that you're homophobic and bigoted. You are told that you're causing kids to commit suicide. Basically, the shrill outcry to any such reports is such that most people aren't willing to talk about it. And then when others say it's about love, how can you be so fixed on some of these things? You say, hey, it's because I love you. I raise this question all the time. We're so concerned about gay suicide. All right, by all means, we should be teaching our kids, be nice to everybody, treat everybody with respect, especially those that seem to be different. Be especially kind to them. If they're outcast, then reach out to them. We should be teaching that to our kids, period. Bullying is bad. Not gay is good. Bullying is bad. We should be teaching that. But the fact of the matter is, if we're really concerned about a kid's health, then shouldn't we warn that kid, especially a male, even though there are some factors with lesbian behavior that are dangerous as well, but shouldn't we tell that kid that homosexual practice, male-on-male sexual acts, have a much higher percentage of sexually transmitted diseases and other related issues? And the most recent report from the CDC this very month, Centers for Disease Control, confirms that very thing. Where's the concern about that? And where's the concern that even in affirming societies where marriage has been redefined. A man can marry a man or a woman can marry a woman. And you've got very affirming environments that you still have a higher percentage of suicide, depression, drug and alcohol use in the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender identified community than the society as a whole. Of course we need to speak these things. Of course love compels us to, but for most it's become too unpopular. It's like, well, why are you so fixated on that? I'm not fixated on it. It's a medical report. What if this was tobacco? What if this was, you know, a oversized meal at McDonald's and obesity issues? Come on. You know, global warming, you know, whatever the causes, people are getting, someone's going to say, he's compared homosexual activity to global warming. No, I'm not. I'm making a point that all these other causes you can shout about, but this one, dare say a word and just say, you know, it's not the way we were designed. A man wasn't designed to be with a man. Consequently, right. There are just more problems with it. And because you don't have a female involved in a relationship, the female often tempers the man and helps him to bring some of his sexual desires and appetites under control because of the nature of marriage and the flow of life and things like that. Whereas man with man does not have that same tempering effect to that same degree. We ought to raise it. It is a fair issue. And even with the redefinition of marriage, the fact is that a man and woman, even though there are all kinds of problems in marriage and unfaithfulness and these different things, that a man and woman have a much better chance of being faithful to each other than two men. It's just the nature of things and the way they are. But you dare talk about this, and it's like, look, Tom and Jim down the block, they're the nicest guys in the world, and they adopted a handicapped Korean boy. They may be very caring. It doesn't mean that the behavior is healthy or that the relationship is what God intended.
Yeah, it's alarming to me that we would, you know, my heart goes out because, again, I have a family member that was gay and still do, and then have one that was gay that is no longer gay. But this is something that is so black and white. Why would we want to call it or recognize it as normal? Now, people obviously have these attractions. Our hearts go out to them. But to redefine and call this normal behavior and recognize it through the government, when you have a report like this saying that you have that high of a rate of a deadly disease, scary.
Absolutely. It absolutely is, especially when we've moved so far with no smoking, you know, and the anti-tobacco campaigns and all these other things. If you look at the health risks associated with this and how high they are, the fact that there's not a public outcry or that AIDS is our fault somehow. And I understand in Africa, AIDS has decimated the continent there, and it's mainly heterosexual. But among homosexuals, it's spread even more rapidly. These are health issues. Patrick, thanks for raising it. For those who've just been confirmed that I'm a homophobic hater, and so is Patrick, can I ask you a question? If something's unhealthy and we say it's unhealthy, why is that hateful? Oh, by the way, Miranda, I just looked at your report again on Right Wing Watch. Actually, you misrepresented me. Yeah, the headline says, ex-gay activist, homosexuality shameful like theft and drug abuse. First, I'm not sure what you mean by ex-gay activist. I'm not ex-gay. If you mean I'm an activist on behalf of people coming out of homosexuality, sure, that's true. So anyway... But you said, I was very excited to get a call on Line of Fire program from a, quote, ex-gay woman named Margaret. She cried as she told me how she'd been caught up in wicked bisexuality. And she said it's a shameful thing. She's never admitted it. And then I said it should be shameful because certain lifestyles are shameful. I'm ashamed of the fact I stole money from my father and shot heroin before I was saved. The headline says homosexuality is shameful like theft and drug abuse. And she's talking about the promiscuous bisexual lifestyle she was living, being with men and being with women. Not homosexuality, but bisexuality, from what she was saying, the promiscuity that she was living in. And that's what I immediately said was shameful. Now, yeah, it's shameful if you had sex with a man and with a woman. I agree that's shameful. Uh-huh. But your headline isn't accurate. Come on, Miranda. I say enough. You could quote it more accurately. All right. Richard Warren Braun is in a death cell in Romania, dying of tuberculosis, miraculously preserved through the torture, malnourishment, mistreatment. There was a saintly pastor. And if ever there was, if they had medication and someone else was sicker than him, he'd give away his medicine. If they were shivering in the winter but someone else was colder, he'd give away his blanket. There was a young Romanian man who was a criminal within the same death cell with him, dying of tuberculosis. He was at the end of his life, and this pastor was reaching out to him and told him he needed to put his faith in Jesus. And the young man said, "But I don't know who Jesus is or what Jesus was like." And this pastor said, "Jesus is just like me." And the young man said, "Then I want him. Then I want him." And he got wonderfully saved before he died. Can you imagine if when people want to know who Jesus is and what he's like, that we've lived such a life and set an example that we can say to them, "Jesus is just like me." Wow.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, please remember to visit AskDrBrown.org, click on the Line of Fire, and then read the article that I wrote. It's an absolutely critically important article on a dangerous and deadly deception. My latest article getting a lot of reads and attention already. So go to AskDrBrown.org, click on the Line of Fire, and you can read that article for yourself. John Wesley said this: "Vice does not lose its character by becoming fashionable." Vice does not lose its character by becoming fashionable. And he also said, "What one generation tolerates, the next generation will embrace." We are seeing things happen in our society today because of what the church has tolerated rather than rejected as wrong and rather than set a better example. In my book, Revolution in the Church, which we'll tell you about in a moment, how you can get in digital form, I talk about how the church slept its way through so much of the counterculture revolution of the 60s. And what I document here is just shocking, eye-opening. But then I talk about how God moved. And there was a Jesus revolution, an incredible Jesus revolution that could have swept the society, but the church missed so much of what was happening. That's when I got saved during that time. This is a former hippie who's on Catherine Coleman's show. If you remember Catherine Coleman, on her show, along with Pastor Chuck Smith, who was one of the pastors, founder of Calvary Chapel, which, of course, across the nation now, who understood something special was happening with the young people. Listen to what this former hippie had to say.
The message is that these are the last days and that Jesus Christ is returning really soon. And the prophet Joel and the prophet Peter said that in the last days that God would pour out his spirit upon all flesh and that his sons and daughters would prophesy and that his servants and handmaidens would speak forth the anointed word of God. And God is raising up from the very bottom, and he's raising up the foolish and what the world considers dumb. Yeah. And he's putting his spirit upon them, and he's anointing them, and they're starting to preach the gospel, and thousands of people are starting to get saved everywhere. And so
it's thrilling.
It sure is. And so because these are the last days, God has chosen himself some prophets. And the church for so long has been expecting a certain mold of what a Christian should look like or what a Christian should be or what a Christian should say. And God is blowing everybody's mind because he's saving the hippies. And nobody thought a hippie could be saved.
Yeah, now, of course, there was the thought, this is it, Jesus is coming at any moment. But, yeah, he articulates some things well in terms of the amazing move that was taking place. Billy Graham said, "We are the Bibles the world is reading. We are the creeds the world is needing. We are the sermons the world is heeding." D.L. Moody said, "Where one man reads the Bible, 100 read you and me." 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Tommy in Well, I wanted to. Carl in Addison, Texas, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, sir. Thanks, sir, for all you do on bringing the truth about this matter to light. I really just have a comment and a little information as to why I may actually need to request the book that you just said that you were offering. Queer Thing Happened to America.
Yeah.
To make it quick, I'm a veteran who kind of lost my Army career due to this matter. I had back in 89 or so, I had a sergeant. This was back before Don't Ask, Don't Tell was changed, you know, so I can only imagine what it's like now. But he made it obvious to me when I first got overseas that he, you know, had his eye on me, so to speak. And he kind of gets what he wants. And I'm totally baffled by it, totally shocked by it, and kind of laughed it off and was thinking, hey, I'll just have to work around this. Turned out I ended up having some other problems, some foot problems based on the combat boots, and was trying to request him to go to Walter Reed Medical Center to get it corrected and continue my Army career. Well, he pulled me to the side and told me that, you know, basically, if I play ball with him on his little homosexual agenda, that all of that can go according to where I want it to go, and if I don't, then get ready to consider my Army career over, because there's something going on called Grand Rutman at that time, that where Congress was limiting how much the military could spend on things like that, and this could be a reason to spend this process me out, since, you know, I was born with flat feet, and that's what's really caused me trouble, and that's probably what will happen if, you know.
And Carl, how long ago was that?
I'm sorry?
How long ago was that when you were in the service?
That was in 89. 1989, this happened.
Yeah, and well, things have come a long way since then, haven't they?
Yeah. Oh, yes, sir. Now they have Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It's not even there anymore. And so a guy like I'm describing to you now, he could rip a guy like in my position apart even more now, because, I mean, whereas before I could have went to, like I did, I went to my commander, and as this problem got a whole lot more heated up, I went to my commander and I told him what was going on. My platoon sergeant had made some advances toward me that totally against the military code of justice, and I want to address this legally. I want to, you know, I went with the whole route.
I just got to jump in because I'm at the end of the program. Obviously, you have gay men and women who are devoted to the country and serving diligently in the military, but again, you open a Pandora's box. I mean, you start changing these issues and making sexuality an issue instead of saying, hey, what you do in your private life is your private life, but you're joining the military, you're serving the country, you're going to have to put those things aside. Hey, Carl, if you don't have a copy of A Queer Thing Happened to America, if I heard you properly, I want to send you a copy. Andrew will get your name and address in a moment. If I did hear you properly that you want to get the book, I want to send you a copy to read. And friends, finally, to our great excitement, after many years, by two critically important revolutionary manuals, Revolution and Revolution in the Church, chock full of inspiration, quotes, life-changing direction, they're now available in ebook form, and you don't need any ebook reader. You just need a smartphone, a computer, a tablet. They come with a reading app that's specially made for Christian books, in fact. $32 for the books if you got them in print form, but today, if you order the digital books, the ebooks, just $15.99. It's a special introductory offer. Call the order 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, that's 1-800-278-9978. When you call, you do have to give an email address, though, because you'll be getting emailed information as to how to download the books and start your new account. So take advantage of this. Go to our online bookstore, AskDrBrown.org. Click on the online bookstore, and I trust that you will be richly blessed and all the more a revolutionary for Jesus. My bottom line today, we can preach about Jesus until we're blue in the face, but when we live this out, when our words match up with our deeds, the world will take heed.